Hi, I'm Jen Drummond. Welcome to Seek Your Summit. As a mom, a business owner, and the first female to climb the 7 second summits, I realize that the mountains we climb are a part of our success. And it is up to us to go beyond that success into a life of significance. Listen in as I share personal stories and interview others who have led a life of both success and significance, and now they are paying it forward.
Woo, looking good. Friends, today I have a guest named Neil Mant on the podcast, and I'm not even doing his introduction because it'd be so long we'd have nothing we could talk about because we'd run out of time. So Neil, give us like the abbreviated version of your superstar powers.
Sure. So when I was a young child, very young, I always knew what I wanted to do, okay. Which, by the way, I feel for other people that don't know what they want to do. It must be a struggle. You know, and so many of my friends, they went to school and they're like, maybe I'll find out in school. And they just never found out. I always knew I wanted to be in the entertainment business.
Always?
Always.
Okay. Like what part of the entertainment business?
All of it.
All of it?
All of it. I wanted to be doing deals. I wanted to be directing and producing and writing and acting. All of it.
Okay. What's your favorite role that you've done?
Like a guy I looked up to as a kid was Brandon Tartikoff.
Okay.
Do you know who Brandon Tartikoff is?
I'm going to say no.
he was an executive at NBC. And this guy was like my hero, Brandon Tartikoff.
As a child?
As an 11-year-old.
Like, what about like firefighter, policeman, you know, those kind of things?
No.
Not your deal.
Network executives.
Network executives.
Yeah. Rune Arledge.
All right.
He was the founder, really, of ABC Sports. And he ran ABC News and he ran ABC Primetime. Rune Arledge, a legend. And like Dick Ebersol, a guy ran NBC, the Olympics, and stuff like that. So these are the people that I looked up as a kid and I always wanted to be in the business.
What business were your parents in that would introduce you to this business?
Well, my mom was in a nurse.
Okay.
Getting her master's degree.
Okay.
And later went on to be a master's degree teacher in a nursing program.
Okay.
And my father was in life insurance. He was in personnel. He ran personnel for some small life insurance.
Okay. And did you grow up here?
No, I grew up in a suburb of Detroit.
I'm a Michigander too.
Oh, where are you from?
I'm from Holland, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Smitten with the mitten.
Yeah, totally. I'm from here.
I'm on the other side. Yeah, I'm from this
Holland.
Side.
Yeah, yes. They have a tulip time in Holland.
Yes, we do. Good.
Yeah, I know Holland. I was there.
Okay, so from Detroit, you were this kid who was like, I'm going to be in the entertainment business.
Right.
Which is across the world for
it's
you.
Global.
From
Well, it's everywhere.
Right. But still.
And I also, coupled with that, I really liked Indiana Jones.
Well, who didn't?
And so I wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Yes.
And I wanted to be in every aspect of the entertainment business.
Okay.
At only the top level.
I love it. Way to be ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, like, why not, right?
I agree. 100%.
If you're going to
climb a mountain, climb Everest, okay? Let's be real.
Right?
Yes.
I only had a couple of problems. Not many.
Okay.
First, I didn't know anybody in the entertainment business.
Right.
Didn't know a person west of Chicago.
Okay.
Had no education in any of the components we're talking about.
Okay.
So those were kind of my, and I didn't have any money.
Yeah. To most of us, that'd be, not doing that path. But to you, you're like, the details.
Yeah, what do you know?
What do you know?
So I somehow went from having that dream to having fulfilled it.
I know.
Beyond my wildest dreams of what I could have done. And since we haven't told the audience kind of what I've done.
Yeah, let's
do that. I have now, I'm 54. I came here when I was 20. But I started at 10 in the business. And in that last 43 years, I've written, directed, produced studio-level movies, network movies, TV shows, thousands of episodes of TV shows. I've won 5 Emmys. I've been in the augmented reality and virtual reality and artificial content space since 2015.
Okay.
I've run multiple studios. I've owned studios that I built from scratch. And I've traveled to 126 countries around the world, and I've done productions in over 50 of them. And that's kind of just the broad strokes.
Right. Minor, broad strokes. That's amazing. What's been your favorite project?
Well, because I'm curious,
mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to do new things. And once I sort of get to a point where I feel like I kind of understand whatever it is that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
I usually move on from that.
Yeah, you're the entrepreneur type, the aha moment, and you figured it out. And then you're like, okay, now this is mundane.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do the systems.
So I started news reporting as a teenager, and I was working for NBC at 20.
Oh.
And then I was put in charge, and I was a reporter for ESPN at 22. And then I was put in charge of the O.J. Simpson trial as a producer at 26.
Wow.
For ABC News. And after that, I also did Oklahoma City bombing. And after that, I was kind of like, okay, I'm done with news. Okay. And then I had been doing news, and I was like, done. Let's move into feature films.
Okay.
And I really just left news at that moment in time. What would have been like the beginning of someone's career, I was like, okay, next. Mm-hmm. And then I did independent films for the remainder of the 90s. And then I was like, all right, I want to start doing TV shows and start creating TV shows. And then only kind of dabbled a bit in the film business for a while and just really heavy into TV. And then after that, I was like, oh, I'm going to go into virtual reality. And so just heavy into these things. So I'll do them for moments of time. So I have all these kind of different varied experiences. So within any given medium, like in news, OJ was my favorite and worst thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was horrible. I was the producer in charge of the trial every day. I was involved in writing the stories and I was there and I lived that experience, which was, you know, it was sort of a soul-sucking experience.
I can imagine.
And so, like, in that world, that was...
That's a young age to be running that huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Is it what, like, what's your favorite memory? Of running what?
Of OJ?
No, well, not of OJ. We're not getting into that mess.
No, nothing. Like, news is so intense. You know, it's just like, so, it's all bad.
It's so intense and it's so extreme and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Like a light switch. Like then it's gone and then it's next and it's next and it's next.
And it's not my story. That I think that's what bothered me is I was I was regurgitating these negative things that other people were associated with and it was just, it just brought me down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm a very positive person and I don't want to be associated with negative things. So for me, like after that, I went back into creating my own movies and that was very uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I made a film a few years back that you would love and I'm feeling filled with shame and anger and regret that I didn't give it to you before we came here because you would really love it and now we can't talk about it as much.
Oh.
But I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
Anyway, you can cut this down. I just rambled too much.
No, you're good.
It's called Last Stop for Paul, and it's about these two guys that go and backpack around the world. And everywhere they go, they meet interesting people and wacky things happen. And they're sprinkling the ashes of their dead buddy to sort of celebrate him. And from country to country, they get closer together in this bonding experience. And they also sort of turns into the hangover everywhere.
Okay.
And it was all shot improvised.
Wow.
My buddy and I just went around the world and we'd show up and I'm like, shh, we're shooting a scene here. Could you turn the music in the restaurant down? Oh, ma'am, come over here. Would you be our actress? And it was all
impromptu.
All impromptu, the whole movie.
Wow.
And it won a lot. It won like 50 film festivals.
Oh, wow. Did it go to Sundance? You know, Sundance is my hometown.
It did not go to Sundance.
Okay.
It went to every festival but Sundance.
Okay. Fair. Sundance.
You're really either in Sundance
or you're not. Yeah.
And it did very well in the festival circuit. And then it was released in the theaters. And then Showtime came to me and they bought it. Then they said, let's turn it into a TV series. And so it did two seasons on Showtime. And I wrote and directed and produced and starred in it.
Wow. Yeah, so I did this climbing pursuit, right? Set a world record. We filmed a whole bunch of it. But we didn't have a storyline or a thought process going in. We're like, we're just going to capture footage. And then we'll write a story afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
That has not worked out so well.
Why?
I don't know. Like the story they started writing, I'm like,
who's they?
Like I had some people give me some advice on it.
Okay.
And so then I listened to them. They helped. And I was like, no, this isn't the story that's supposed to be told with this footage. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think we all have hardships. Yeah. And those hardships are what we need to become who we are. And it kind of villainized some of those places that I didn't really like. It was maybe this big of a deal and they made it into this big of a deal. So then the movie felt really inauthentic. It was really frustrating.
Okay. You just touched on a point that's important to me.
Okay.
Because this is what I'm working on right now is helping people. I have this new course.
Yes, you're telling me about this. And I've watched a little bit of it because I'm like, I need this advice right now.
Right. And the course is how to make it in the entertainment business.
Right.
And it's for anyone who is ever a digital creator. You're making stuff on YouTube or TikTok and you're like, boy, I wish I could figure a way to turn this into a TV series or a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the case like you went out and you did this enormous adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Like world-class adventure.
Yes.
And it was captured.
Yes.
Properly, right? You have the
footage. I mean, for the most part, yeah. I mean, we had red cameras on one of them and we had other cameras. And so, yeah, for the most part.
And then you gave it to the they. That's why
the
I keep asking.
I don't want to say the they because—
Okay, so it's a group, a person, an entity.
Yes, that is kind of a producer, director type thing.
And they, quote, did not deliver on the story.
Correct.
And this is...
And I own the footage, so I'm like, I'm not doing that story, so thank you.
Okay, so first part of our class here.
Yes.
Check the box, you already passed it, because you own the footage.
Yes.
That's the first thing, and that's what everyone has to remember here, is you need to own your IP, your intellectual property rights.
Right.
And you were smart enough to make sure.
And the reason why? Because a friend of mine told me, hey, listen, you're doing deadly things.
Yeah.
If someone dies in one of these experiences and they can make you the villain if you don't own the footage.
Yeah.
Even might not be your fault, but you'd be amazed at what they can spin and cut and do.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, perfect. I did have someone pass away in one of my experiences, but luckily I wasn't in the same location at the same time or I would have been swiped up by the avalanche as well. But yeah, lots of crazy.
That's called Frankenbiting.
Frankenbite. Okay.
And when they do interviews with you and other people, and then after the fact, they take your interview and they interview on day one saying this and on day 12 saying that, and then they cut the two together like they happen at the same time.
Right.
They Frankenbite it.
Yep.
And that's how reality TV can make people not look so great.
Yes. Yes.
Frankenbiting. And there's no rules, you know, it's right. Reality. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you did this amazing adventure and you didn't get the product out of it that you
wanted
is one component of the problem, mm-hmm. Okay? And again, so what I try and tell people is how to fix the whole problem, which is first ideate, which you already did. You thought about it. You said, we have this great idea. I'm going to go in this adventure trip. I'm going to climb a mountain that can kill people, that does kill people, and I'm going to turn it into this great story of inspiration.
That's what I was hoping. So, I wanted somebody at home being like, I can do more. Even if it's just walking to get my mail, I can do this because that's where it starts.
Which, by the way, is true.
Yes.
And I feel the same way. It's about getting up and going to the mailbox to start with and figuring out what's next. Mm-hmm. So you ideate. Presumably you talk to other people. You kick around this idea. Mm-hmm. And you then probably bring in an expert or two that says, okay, well, just from a climbing perspective, this is what would have to be involved. And then maybe someone else said from a shooting perspective, this is what would have to be involved. Here's a safety perspective. And so you thought about that. You didn't just go grab a GoPro the next day and your buddy and just go do it, right? There was some thought process, some planning.
There's a little bit. Where we failed is we didn't go in with a storyline. We were kind of
story is secondary.
So we were doing it back, you know, I think now what I've heard is a lot of documentaries are somewhat scripted, mm-hmm. and that ours was very much, here's what happened on each mountain, here's the footage that we have, can we tell the story from it? And there's 7 mountains. So you don't want to bring everybody to a summit of every one of them. You'll be bored. So it's learning how to tell the story and what footage you use from what mountain. And maybe you don't use all 7 mountains, right? There's so many ways you can skin the cat.
So there's so many ways to skin this cat, and yet it wasn't skinned.
I know. It's terrible. I'm sitting in footage, and I want to cry.
Okay. So again, this is one of the many scenarios where I help people.
Okay. Let's
so
go.
Let's go. Stay to the beginning. And let's work through this. I want to fix your problem first because I think other people listening – we'll say, okay, well, he came in, that we were just chatting about other stuff, and suddenly we solved your problem.
Perfect.
Okay, so we've established you're not happy with the final product.
Yes.
Great. First of all, I'd like to understand, where are we in this final product? Do you have a cut, an actual cut, that you're like, somebody would be happy with this except me, but someone says it's done?
They have a thing where—
Do they say it's done? The they.
No, so they have a thing where it's like 2 hours worth of footage.
A rough
cut. Makes, like a rough cut.
Right.
So that, because— And so then they showed the rough cut to me.
And you said no.
I was like, nice to know you were done.
Peace out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. So you saved quite a bit of time there. All right. So for everyone who doesn't understand that from a production standpoint, it sounds to me like you were looking to make one documentary then. If you did a 2-hour cut from 7 summits,
right.
You're going to cut that down into one great, amazing story.
Yeah. So we either could do a docu-series, which some people recommended because there's 7 summits and that would be something that might be easier and more bite-sized for people to get. Or you do one large doc. Right. That would be 90 to 120 minutes or
and
something.
Right now, your cut is reflecting the latter of the version.
The latter of the options.
Okay. So so just to really simplify that for people, you know, we could see a scenario where there'd be 7 individual episodes. Each one is its own mountain. Mm-hmm. And you could imagine somebody like we all think Netflix right away. We go, oh, Netflix and HBO. I mean, these are the biggest buyers out there. But sure, emotionally, we could see a streamer like that as the buyer.
Yeah, and from what we had heard going into that is that they're looking for adventure footage from a female because there's not a lot out there.
It's true, and they also want international content.
And I hit all 7 continents.
Well, because Netflix is an international platform, and they're looking to have sort of that neutral content that everybody can get behind. And climbing mountains is a universal concept. no one in the world needs to get an explanation as to what it means to climb a mountain.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why true crime is so popular. Because you don't need to explain what a kidnapping is or a murder. Everyone knows what that is.
Got it.
So you're in this very broad but also scarce group of people who do this. So there's that unique component. There's an action component to it. We've seen movies that are action movies made out of these true stories. Yep. Certainly you would have experienced danger, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So it has it all of it. All of it's there, but yet you're telling me you're not. It's not reflected. And what I would say in return is, I would say if it was the easiest, if they were all easy, which there's no way they were, but if they were all easy, you could still make it feel hard. And this was not easy. This was very hard. Mm-hmm. So your situation right now is very clear to me. You just need a new producer. Yeah. You need a new storyteller. And there are many of them out there who you could partner with. And you would say to that storyteller, you'd say, look, I already have this thing done. There's no cost involved in this. And for people—
Kind of done. Because here's another thing, just to add a twist to it.
Yeah.
Is that I have seven children.
Well, wait. Okay. Hold on. Time out. That was a lie. Okay, everybody, you know, if you don't see this, she's a liar. Okay? I don't know why you would bring me into your studio and just lie to me like that.
I know, it's crazy.
You adopted these.
I have seven adopted children. Seven of my own humans.
This is a liar.
Yes, all one family.
Anyone listens to her, you listen to a liar. There's no way you have seven children.
Seven continents.
How is this possible?
Seven mountains, and three of them want to go climb one of the mountains with me. So in February, we're going to go to Kenya, and we're going to climb the mountain together that I've already done, that I think is hard enough to challenge them, but easy enough where they're going to be safe. And so that could be part of the movie if the right person comes around and says, oh, I want to tell this story about handing the torch off to the next generation.
This I could sell this in my sleep.
It's crazy.
In my sleep. This is an easy one.
It's crazy.
Okay, so just to wrap up what you got to do, you need to get a new storyteller.
Yep.
Unfortunately for you, I'm not producing right now.
Okay.
Or I would.
Okay.
I'm already drooling. Because I've done so much sports television, like I've had action shows, I produced the Olympics.
I heard this.
Like tons,
all the things.
Tons of shows on ESPN. So I'm going to make some introductions to you.
Okay, perfect.
To some storytellers. And you have two options, and anyone else who finds them in this situation, some in the situation where you've shot something and it's pretty good and you have the pieces, but the person that shot it or the person that didn't produce it didn't complete it properly, you know, not because they were bad. I'm assuming they just didn't have the skills or they didn't jive with it or whatever it was. It wasn't a fit. So we need to find someone who is a fit for you. Mm-hmm. And there's two ways of doing business with them. One is you write them a check. And the other one is you get them to work on it for something on the back end.
Got it.
And those are the two ways you work with them.
Yep.
And given the fact that it's already been shot and somebody could do an assessment of it and could evaluate it, you could do a couple of things. You could make what's called a sizzle reel.
Yep.
Where you take that and do like a 1 or 2 minute trailer and you shop that to producers and potentially investors. You could also take it to studios, although I would be hesitant. I'd rather find a producer first who has done those kinds of shows on HBO and on, you know, Netflix, that done adventure stuff. And you say to them, can you help me round out this vision? And you're going to obviously compare them against their previous work.
Yep.
And when you kind of put those pieces together, you just have to evaluate, oh, do I have to pay this person $10,000 to manage the edit and someone else $10,000 to do the edit? Do I have a $25,000 bill to finish it, which I think is probably in the world you could be in and get out clean? Or maybe you say, look, I'll give you, you know, 5% or 10% of the profits if you help me on this. But ultimately, you really only have to get a really good sizzle reel at this point to pull in more capital to finish it. If you had the money, just you need to find someone who can manage these people, pay them and be done with it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because the concept is going to sell. It's valuable. All the things you mentioned, you're a woman, you have an incredible life story, seven kids, you look like a supermodel. I don't even know how you could even carry a backpack.
I have to level out these boobs. I mean, come on, otherwise I'll tip over.
Amazing. So yeah, I think you have a winner on your hands.
Okay.
And so that's what I do is I help people figure out how to get across whatever those humps are. And sometimes the hump is, how do I start?
Right. And when I was looking at your course even, and I was watching the quick sizzle reel of the course, I was like, hey, here's the different areas that you can have the film developed as this far.
Yeah.
And the further along you are, the easier it is to get it to the next level, because people don't want to start with the newborn baby. They want the toddler or the teenager to get it to the next thing. And I liked that. That was very helpful.
Well, there's just so many nuances because there isn't like a set path in Hollywood.
Right.
You know, people, and I've kind of played every role. When I first came here, I was going to be an actor, I thought. Mm-hmm. I had done directing and producing, but I had been a child actor in Detroit and New York. And so I was able to get a talent agent. But I really was looking to be a producer and director of feature films. And I finally, at some point, just had to say, all right, I'm going to max my credit card and make a movie because I didn't.
And you did this at a credit card.
And I did it.
And you were scared? Were you nervous? What were you thinking?
I was like, yeah,
you're like, this is what we do.
I did not have an option.
Okay.
That's kind of how I live my life. Like, I don't have an option. I'm unhirable. I didn't realize it at that moment in time that I couldn't actually be hired and go work at an office and
I get it.
Be in an org structure and follow rules and do what I'm told. It's not possible.
Yeah.
I can do assignments and I can deliver them to people and I can make a product. But, you know, being a part of like the Tuesday weekly meeting and I got to go in there and, you know, everyone does their thing and I got a cost report or whatever. I mean, like, no. Mm-mm. It's just not something I could do.
So you did the first movie on a credit card.
Yeah. A couple hundred grand.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did that end up?
It was called Hijacking Hollywood.
Okay.
My apartment. It was about these two guys. The main guy was played by Henry Thomas, who was Elliot in E.T.
Oh.
And he had just come off of doing the kids in the, or the Legends of the Fall.
Okay.
With Brad Pitt. He was his brother in the movie.
Yep.
So Henry was having an upswing.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, I think that year, got a Golden Globe nomination for some TV movie he did. But it was about a guy who was a PA on a big movie, production assistant, and it was a big action movie. So he's the lowest guy in the totem pole. And his roommate, played by this wily character named Neil Mant.
Wonder if we know him.
Right. He realizes that he sees an article in the Hollywood Reporter that movie is Moby Dick 2, and they're shooting this big shot in Hawaii where they made this giant animatronic whale. It's not visual effects. This is the middle of the 90s, so you still made things.
Wow.
And they had like a cast of 1,000 extras, and there was this big scene where, you know, it was a 50-camera shoot. It was all like attacking on Hawaii. And back in the day, you would then take that film, you put it on an airline, and you fly it back to L.A., and then would go to the lab. And the PA, who's the lowest man on the totem pole, is responsible for taking it to the lab. And in this case, he'd have to pick it up at the airport. And it would just come down the luggage carousel with the other bags.
Wow.
And in that box, that $13 million shoot was all in a box until it got to the lab and was duplicated and distributed.
Oh, my goodness. This gives me a heart attack just thinking about all the things.
My character says, let's steal it and hold it for ransom and get a couple hundred grand out of the producer on this massive movie. Like, they can bury a couple hundred grand.
Right.
Then we make Henry's independent film. And it also starred a guy named Scott Thompson, who was in the Kids in the Hall, and Mark Metcalf, many people remember from Niedermeyer and Animal House and some other movies. And anyway, the character's apartment was right literally across the street from this place on Yucca and Cahuenga.
Okay.
There's a building. We used to have big tags at 18th Street Gang back in the day. It's all nicer now.
Yeah.
I mean, this neighborhood, you'd get, like, seriously, you'd be shot.
Okay.
Coming in this building.
Oh, awesome.
25 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, it was really, you're in like one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in town 25 years ago.
Okay. Times have changed.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
So I made this little movie and then I self-distributed it and it was successful and then that got my movie career going.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
It's nuts.
Okay. So what made you decide to develop the course to help others?
Yeah.
Because you're like.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always created, every show I've ever created in essence is its own company.
Mm-hmm.
It's a separate LLC or it's a separate corporation, separate insurance. I've sold to, you know, every studio in Hollywood. So whether it's Sony or Disney or Warner Brothers or even within the separate groups. So you'd have Viacom, but then within Viacom, you'd have MTV and you'd have VH1 and you'd have Oxygen and all these networks. I've sold to most of those separately. And so you have different business affairs people, you have different companies. You know, and then I've been in different genres from reality to the subgenres of docu-series following someone at a job to a docu-series following an individual to a celeb reality show. So I've had game shows and reality. So I've worked in all of these different genres where I've been the creator of the content and I've seen all the variety of minefields along the way. And so I thought, you know, I'm always mentoring people on an individual basis,
mm-hmm.
and many colleges over the years have asked me to come teach.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just like, for 30 people, I don't have the time.
Right.
But if I could do 3,000 people at one time,
yep.
The course would make sense. But I had to get to a point emotionally, mm-hmm. where I was confident enough with my background that I could be here mm-hmm. and I could say in confidence to people, buy my course, I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I know more than other people know.
And I know nothing. And I will tell you that 13-minute video was a aha, aha, aha moments.
It's great to hear because I realized when I started kind of looking at this as a concept, mm-hmm. if I asked you, I said, who's the thought leader from Hollywood? Who's the thought leader? Right. Who is it?
Yeah.
Like if I said entrepreneurship person, you could come up with Richard Branson or Elon Musk. If I said, you know, like a cheerleader in life, you could come up with Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
If I said like a marketing guy, you could come up with Gary Vee.
Yep.
Who's the Hollywood guy? Who's been around in Hollywood, who's respected and has done a lot of stuff and can—
Not only done it, but then can turn around and help other people connect the dots and write their own story going forward. Because a lot of times people who have done it, the gap, right? Like how do you get there? So what you're doing is you're writing the roadmap of like, here's all the pieces. I'm going to help you figure these out. You're going to know where you're strong and where you're weak. And now we're going to help you get to that next level.
Well, I think that for me, the key thing was exactly what you described, except the guys and the gals who make it, they usually make it in one thing.
Right.
You know, I'm a director mm-hmm. and I'm a director and I've worked my career. And I'm a director. I'm a musician. I'm a musician. It's very rare that the person has created, written, produced, directed, starred in movies, TV shows, digital content, virtual reality, augmented reality, artificial intelligence, and did it all with their own money from scratch without knowing anybody. I'm not a Nepo baby. I didn't know anybody.
Hear this? Right here, friends, all in one. I don't, how does that all fit in there? Like, that's impressive.
I can't remember anything. It just all goes out. No, I'm so curious and I'm constantly moving. And obviously, just there's something in my DNA that makes this happen. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously my upbringing, you know, I was taught never to complain and to work hard and, you know, very Midwestern.
Midwest. Hustle, hustle. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Yeah. Period.
Like, we both escaped the vortex. No one leaves Michigan. It's hard to leave.
It's hard to leave, right?
Yes, yes. They're like, why would you leave? I don't know. There's sun. But maybe.
The year I moved here officially, like I'm moving to LA and I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen the sun from the first week of November until the last week of February. I hadn't seen it one day.
I know.
There's a low gray cloud cover.
Yeah.
That hovers
that
over
moisture.
Michigan.
Yes. It just locks it all in. It's in the atmosphere. It is gray. It's gray skies.
Yeah. For months. And
months on end.
It's like that island in King Kong that's surrounded yes. by the methane gas.
Yes. It's not methane gas, though, thankfully. Not that we know of.
No. But yeah, I want to help people. I really do. And there's no rules.
No.
There really isn't any rules. I didn't follow any rules. And that's kind of the exciting thing. You know, when I was a teenager, I would just call record companies and I would say, hey, I want to interview Paula Abdul or I want to interview Deborah Harry or Lenny Kravitz when they're on tour.
Yeah.
In the and I'd say, I have a TV show in Detroit. This was in the 80s.
Okay.
Did you ever see that movie Almost Famous?
Yes.
When that guy did that one interview with that one band?
Yes.
I did it 50 times.
I love it.
And so they would come. I'd go backstage at Joe Louis Arena.
And
I'm there with my buddy Paul, and we've got this public access equipment that I get from the public access TV station.
Yes.
And they're like, who are these kids? These teenagers in here. And we do the interviews, you know? And I remember one time I was with, remember the girl?
What were you afraid of as a kid?
I'm afraid of nothing.
Yeah, I would be afraid to make those phone. I don't know why, but like, who are you to think you could just call up Paul Abdul's or like any of these guys and be like, hey, we're going to interview you. Here's what I'm doing. How old? In my teens?
16.
16. Okay, my 16-year-old has had a license for almost 12 months and has gotten in two accidents, like speeding tickets and everything else, and here you are producing.
All right, well, let's take a step back. If you think that's interesting, or if you think your kids need to step it up. When I was 10, they were making a movie, a TV movie, back when they made TV movies.
Okay.
And they were making it in my, a scene for the wedding was being shot at my church.
Okay.
And Alex Karras. Do you remember Alex Karras?
No.
He was a Detroit Lion in the 70s.
Okay.
He played Mongo in the movie Blazing Saddles. I think that was his first acting job. That was a Mel Brooks movie. Very not PC these days for sure. And he went on to be the dad in Webster.
Okay. Yep.
Remember?
Webster, yep.
So somewhere between, you know, getting out of the Lions and playing Mongo and becoming Webster's dad, he became a producer.
See, and I love this. Like, I think people forget you can have so many roles and so many different positions in life, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, people get stuck in these, like, long-term things that are not them. Like, there's so many facets to us to experience and explore.
It takes a certain person. It's not for everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
that's
I don't judge people because they can't do it.
Right.
Because I can't do what they can do. And we, by the way, we need people who can do the same thing and make sure that the train stays on the tracks.
Yes.
You know, so we're all playing a big part in society. I recognize that. I'm just fortunate that there is an opportunity for someone like me to be creative. Mm-hmm. And it's not all, like, serious all
right.
the time.
And you're not the starving artist, just to let you know. So that's amazing, too.
Well, I've been starving for a lot of my career. I'm fortunate right now. I'm okay. But, yeah, I've seen the starving part for sure. Yeah. So I'm 10. I roll into this movie set in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, in a suburb. I tell people, think about any John Hughes movie, you know, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or Pretty in Pink or Breakfast Club. I grew up in a neighborhood like that.
Okay.
It was a suburb of a Midwestern major city, and I grew up in that kind of an area.
Okay.
Nice area. We weren't rich, but we were comfortable. We were in the poorer part of the nice neighborhood.
Right. We were Midwestern wealthy. Like, everybody was the same. Everybody, like, I didn't know what money was until I left the Midwest. I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, no, I wanted money for sure, but I didn't have it. But I was working as a kid. I was mowing lawns at like 7 or whatever. I had to paper out. Like,
that's awesome.
If I wanted money, I had to go earn it. And that was always the case as a kid. And so I stumble onto this movie set, and I start yelling at people. Now, I'm 10, and I'm short for a 10-year-old, so I'm like, I don't know, little.
Okay.
And they're all like, why is this small person screaming at people? And finally, I get to somebody who's very large, and I'm yelling at him. I'm like, who's in charge? And he points to this other guy, and he's like, that guy's in charge, you know, trying to get free of this crazy person.
Little nap.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I go over to who is Alex Karras, and I scream at him. I said, that guy says you're in charge. And he's like, whoa, oh, God, am I in trouble here? Thinking, you know. And he says, well, how can I help you? I said, I want to know how to get into show business. And so he says, okay, well, I don't have an answer for that. And he's looking for anybody, and he waves this lady over, and he says, this is Nancy. Nancy, this is Neil. And Nancy was the casting director of this TV movie, CBS TV movie.
Okay.
And so she says, go home and get a picture. And so I do. I go home, and the next day I bring it back to her, and she says, write your info on the back of it and look up in the yellow pages for talent agents.
Yellow pages.
So, by the way, people who don't know, the yellow pages was the internet.
Yes.
Back in the olden days.
Yes, it was.
It was a book. We all got it.
You named all your businesses AAAAA, so you showed up at the beginning of whatever category you were in, and onward life went.
There was the yellow pages, and then there was the white pages, which was actual people's address and phone numbers. And you could, your phone numbers were in there.
Yes.
You could get anyone's phone number.
I know.
So I look in the yellow pages. There's nothing listed for agents, and that's the end of that. And then a couple of weeks later, the phone rings in the house, and the yellow rotary phone on the wall.
Yeah, that has a cord.
Yeah, long cord.
That you're all stuck in that spot.
Yep. My mom answers it, you know, of course, because who's calling me? And she says, oh, it's for you, Neil. And so I'm, oh. And I get the phone. I'm like, hello. And she said, and it's a woman at the end of the line. And she starts talking to me, and I'm taking some notes, and I hang up. And my mom was like, what was that all about? And I said, I have an audition tomorrow for a Buick commercial.
Ah!
And my mom was like, you have school tomorrow. And so I go to school the next day. Uh-huh. And the first period ends, and I ask the teacher if I go to the principal's office. I go to the principal's office, and I tell them I need to get a hold of my mom. They give me but then I make a call. She doesn't answer because I know she's not there. And then I get the white pages out. This is the actual phone numbers of people.
People, humans.
And there's an old lady in her late 70s on my street, and I call her, and I tell her, I said, you know, Mrs. Brady, I can't get out of school. My mom's not available. I have an appointment. It's important. Can you come pick me up and take me to the appointment? And this old lady comes and checks me out of school, takes me. I book the commercial. I tell my mom and dad that night that I booked the commercial, and I was shooting the next day. And they're just like, what the?
Oh, my gosh. I love you right now. So this is amazing.
I end up doing about 15 commercials that year.
Okay.
Keep in mind now, this is 1980. Moving into 1981, we're in Detroit. The car industry dominates everything.
The world.
And
yes.
So
yes.
The headquarters for all of the major advertising firms are in Detroit. So not only are the car commercials all produced in Detroit, but there's a lot of other commercials that are done there because that's where their headquarters are.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a substantial amount of SAG and AFTRA work that I did in that first year. And my family is originally from New York City. We'd go there for holidays. So the following year, I'm going to New York. And I said to my mom, hey, I'd love to get an agent in New York. And my mom was like, get real, kid. You're in Detroit, okay? It's New York City, okay?
Yeah.
They're not going to talk to you and your little commercials, you know, big time. It's like, thanks for the encouragement, mom.
It didn't deter you at all? I'm sure you got an agent.
Well, I don't know anybody in New York. I can't, you know, what am I going to do? There's no internet. There's nothing. I'm 11 years old at this point.
Right.
But I had talked about it enough and people had overheard me that somebody gave my mom an article about child acting.
Okay.
And it just mentioned some people. And so she finally relented and she said, now this is where your mom hat is on now, okay? You're playing your mom.
Yeah,
you're trying to be my mom.
Yep.
Be in my mom's head here, okay? My mom's a hardcore New Yorker, grew up there, no bullshit from my parents, work hard, you know, don't complain because you don't have shoes because someone else doesn't have any feet.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
All day, that was my world.
Yeah.
So she agrees to take me around to meet some agents, okay, when
Amazing.
We go to New York.
Okay.
Now, I didn't know that taking me around at 5:30 on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, wasn't really taking me around to anything.
Right, right.
Nobody would be there, right?
Right, exactly.
It's your mom.
Well played, mom. Well played.
Am I correct?
100%.
100%.
Yes.
Unfortunately for my mother, somebody was there.
Nice.
The door was open. He was waiting for traffic to die down. And he's like, yeah, come on in. And he looks at the resume and the headshot. And he looks at my mom. He's like, yeah, this is legit. This kid's done a bunch of real work. He gives me a script to read. I read the script. And he's like, wow, this guy's great. And my mom's like, really? And he's like, yeah. Look at his resume. And he says, you know what? There's an audition right now, a callback for a national Bubblegum ad. And it shoots the day after Thanksgiving. Would you like to go on the audition? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, Bubblegum. Are you kidding?
And my mom's like, well, I don't know. He's like, yeah, it's across the street. So 8 minutes later, I'm in an office across the building at Bryant Park. And if you've ever been to Bryant Park, it's just like this slanted building there. And I'm in an advertising agency and there's a table and there's like six people there. The commercial is happening in 36 hours. And they're like, can you sing and dance? And I'm like, yeah, I can, you know, because it's going to be on a bus and there's going to be the eight kids singing and dancing. And you're singing a song about bubblegum and having fun. And everyone's chewing gum. And so I, you know, I sing and dance. And they're like, you're great. And they move me across the hall into a recording studio. And I go into the booth. And the seven other kids are already there waiting for me. And all seven of them are currently on Broadway. One of them was Bob Fosse's kid. Several were in Evita. And the other one was Annie.
What?
And my mom is like, what?
It just happened.
She just follows me into this recording studio and she's in like this other side of the booth with all these like super stage moms, like the most insane stage moms.
Yeah,
I've
ever
seen.
Yeah, I can just imagine this right now.
And my mom's like, what in the hell am I doing here?
Of course.
So this happens. We shoot, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. And then a couple weeks later, I get a call. They're like, come on back. I got another one for you. And I flew back in. And then I got it. And then maybe a month later, they call and I went back and I didn't get it. And at the time, they had a discount flight, you know, it was like New York Air, it was like 100 and something bucks in today's dollars. It was like 25 bucks then.
Okay.
And round trip.
Wow.
And so we do this like three or four times and we'd fly in, I'd stay with my grandmother, we'd come back. And after the, and so then, hold on a second, I'm gonna pick that one up. Because Lauren, my wife, is on the phone.
Fired.
I don't even understand. Like, Lauren, seriously? You're married to me. Okay, picking up in Detroit.
Okay, yes,
sorry,
yes,
buddy, you got
you're
an
good.
Head here.
We're good.
So we do this trip a couple of times. We go back and forth to New York City from Detroit for some auditions, and some were successful, some weren't. And finally, you know, we get a call. My mom says to me, put your mom hat on here, okay?
Okay,
you
mom
tell
hat's
me,
on.
You tell me if this is how you would do this, okay? My mom says to me, she says, I can't do it. I can't go. I've got your husband. And she says, I got my husband, your dad. I have your two sisters. I've got your brother, I have work. I can't keep doing this. I can't go. Just don't talk to anybody. And she takes me to the airport and she puts me in a plane. And I fly to New York City alone for 2 years, commuting at 11.
Oh my God.
I fly to Newark, New Jersey. This is 19.
I love this. I wish this was the way it is today. I mean, I can't even let my kids go to the movie theater without the movie theater saying, like, your children are here. Are they allowed to be without a parent? Yeah, they're 13. They'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm traversing Port Authority in New York City and then down 42nd Street and Times Square
at 11.
In 1981. They had just made Taxi a few years earlier, Taxi Driver.
Oh my gosh.
This was all adult theaters, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Drugs. And I'm just like a little businessman walking down the street with my briefcase.
I love this.
I'm hanging out backstage at Annie and Evita in between auditions. And so the idea that I could call it a teenager and call record companies and be like, I got a TV show.
Listen, yes.
Please. Sleeping.
Yes. Oh my God, I love you.
But then I would leave school and I'd go on tour with them for a couple nights. We'd hang out and drink and party. I mean, like, I'm hanging out with Billy Idol, you know, shotgunning beers as a teenager.
Oh my goodness. Like,
it was crazy.
It is crazy.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit of your crazy in your course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what I teach you is there's no rules.
Right.
You know, I mean,
Well, there's so many limits that we put on ourselves, and you're telling us just let them go.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure, let those go. You're the one that's controlling those things. Mm-hmm. Do not put any barriers, any self-imposed barriers. You should be able to let those barriers down. Mm-hmm. I mean, for you, that's your whole thing, right?
Oh, 100%. Seek your summit.
I mean, I've done it, like hardcore traveling for some of my TV shows, like jungle stuff.
Yeah.
I've been arrested in some strange places.
Yeah, I've been in a jail cell, all the things.
You haven't done it until you've been arrested in a foreign country.
Yeah, right. Unless you're in a jail in a foreign country, you haven't traveled. It's not, it doesn't count.
Doesn't count. And when you have to bribe your way out and you're like, how much do I have to give this guy to do it now and not have to wait till someone else is more expensive? That's like the calculus, right?
Yeah, it is. It is 100%.
But that's next level. Hollywood is not like that. Hollywood is opportunity, you know? You can just... People want to do things. It's just about finding the right people. Mm-hmm. That's the trick of Hollywood.
Yeah. That's everything now, right? There's so much. So it's learning how to navigate to the right people. There's so much information. What's the real noise? What do we really want to hear?
That's correct. And so I'm hoping at this point, given all the things I've touched and the way I've made this course, I designed it for people who are in the shortest attention span world. There's 125 videos that are 3 to 7 minutes long.
Perfect.
And it's about, like I said, around 13 hours or so.
Okay.
And so people can come in and they can watch pieces of it. They say, oh, I really care about setting up a business. Here's, you know, an hour's worth of stuff of how to set up a corporation and what kind of insurance do I need? Or you're like, I want to know how to sell a sizzle reel, how to make the sizzle reel, how to call someone at a network, how to cold call people, how to use LinkedIn. Because I didn't know anybody. And I still, my network grows every day because I just pick up the phone and I'll call anybody. Mm-hmm. Fearless.
I love this.
Yeah.
Okay. We're having everybody who's listening that is interested in doing anything with a movie. This is the course that you want to take. Or anything media-wise, really. It's not even just a movie.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
It's not just the movie. But let me ask you this. My sort of premise is that the most important thing to us is our health.
100%.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. Mental health and then physical health even.
Let's just put health in a bucket.
Fair.
And because it's universal, like I don't think anybody's going to debate us on this one. I even take it off the table because it's not even really part of a list because it's obvious. Mm-hmm. Okay, so just ignoring the health component as being primary to us. The real number one thing I would say on our list that's important to all of us that's universal is our time. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
100%.
For sure.
Yes.
So, well, if the time is the most important thing, we should always be looking for ways of saving time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for me, but for you. Like, even in our relationship here, how you've saved time by building this great studio that we came in here and we hit the ground running and it was good to go.
Yeah.
You know, so you put in that effort to make sure that this process is smooth and you have a team of people here that are making this happen, right?
Correct.
And so wherever we can for either ourselves or other people's in business to make things move easier, we want to save time, right? And the second most important thing, I think, after that is what does the internet say about us when we search you, each other, right? And I'm sure this is something you must talk to your kids all the time.
100%.
Is that internet is a real permanent record, not like what they told us in the fourth grade. We're like, oh, you didn't do well on math. It's on your permanent record.
Right, it's there.
Like, this is real permanent record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay, so to that end, every single person that hears this, everyone that you ever talk to in your life should really think of themselves as a media company.
So whether
you're selling a movie or a TV show is irrelevant. We're selling ourselves 24/7.
We're building our brand.
Always.
Always.
And does the internet say, whether I want to date you or work with you or partner with you or invest in you, does it say you're worth spending time with? Mm-hmm. Does it say you're worth my attention? If it doesn't, you need to fix that. And that's one of the main components of my course is how to make the internet say you're great, even if you're not a content creator. Which for many people, it's even more important.
Right.
because like I don't create content, or you know, my LinkedIn, I'm low pro on that, or oh, I don't really use social media. Wrong, wrong, wrong. You need to use everything, and you need to use them all specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't do the same thing on Twitter that you do on Instagram.
Right.
And so there are these processes that we all should understand. And you know, it's like in school, we're not learning all the right things. I feel like when we were kids, you know, home ec was, you know, a semester. Like, I think people should have been taught how to cook a little bit more than just one semester, right?
Yes.
No one ever really taught banking. Like, that seems like an important thing.
Right.
You know, so online behavior, banking, how to set up companies, and how to think differently is what I teach in this course.
I like it. I already took part of it, and I love it, and so I support it. So everybody listening, sign up if you have any kind of digital footprint and you're looking to get any kind of media, which you are if you're alive in today's world. This is your course. So thank you.
Let's take a minute if I can, because I'm in rare company here.
You're a minute.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions.
I'm here.
And maybe we could bond over this.
Let's bond.
Okay, let's talk about being arrested in a foreign country.
Yes. Okay, well, I wasn't super arrested.
Doesn't matter. Were there authorities in your way? Were they threatening you?
So I had two situations. So one, I go to climb K2 in 2021. Mm-hmm. I don't summit. A teammate dies in an avalanche. I choose to go down and help my team instead of continue up the pursuit. Everybody listening, there's always who we are as people. It's more important than what we achieve. So I wanted to come down and be a good human. It's time to leave Pakistan. And the United States pulled out of Afghanistan at this time. Afghanistan borders Pakistan. So I'm trying to leave this country. There's roads that are washed out because of the monsoon and this, that, and the other thing. We have to do passport checkpoints everywhere. And they all of a sudden realize, you know what? You're not safe. You're an American citizen, and we have problems with our next door neighbor. And we're a little worried about you getting kidnapped because these roads are not allowing cars to go fast enough, and this will be a mess. So then I have to stay at a police station until they have somebody safe enough and the road's moving fast enough that they can transport me from where I am to the airport to get out of this country. So that's one scenario. Another scenario is there's this little place called Western Papua, which is located in Indonesia.
Yeah, Papua New Guinea, I've been there.
As its neighbor.
That's correct.
Right? So Papua New Guinea's on this side, Western Papua's on this side.
Yes.
Okay? There's the largest gold mine in the world.
If we could, just to level set, because we're throwing some names people may not know.
Okay.
This is just north of Australia.
Yes.
There's a giant chunk of land there, and on one half of it is West Papua, the other side is Papua New Guinea, and then Indonesia butts up against that.
And Indonesia, oh, like West Papua.
Is Indonesia.
Is Indonesia.
Correct.
It's a province of Indonesia.
And there's 300 million people in Indonesia. And it's I think, number one on the list of places that's going to be really hot in the future.
Yes.
Like
agreed.
Every day will be over 120.
Yes.
Yeah.
Insanity. Okay. And it's so hot and humid you want to die.
Muggy.
Yes.
Jungles.
Yes, jungles. Everywhere. You just are always wet.
And did you know that 95% of the jungles of Papua and Papua New Guinea have never been explored?
No, I believe it because you can't go explore because you'll be eaten.
Correct.
Okay. So the largest gold mine in the world is located in Western Papua, owned by a U.S. company.
Love it.
So the Papua New Guinea people want to own it, right?
Yeah.
It's not our same land. We should own it. The Western Papuans want to own it because it's on their land.
Makes sense.
And they don't want to be a part of Indonesia. Indonesia doesn't want to let it up because of the natural resources. All makes sense. So we have a three-way war going on, and I'm a U.S. citizen, kind of look a little American, go there because I'm like, I just need to climb this one mountain here. So just if you can, we can take a helicopter, get to the base. I'll run up it real quick, come back down, and no one will even know. They pick me up at the airport in an armed car.
Yeah.
I'm like, are we like filling the like ATM machine somewhere? What's going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they bring me to a hotel.
Yeah.
It's not a hotel. There's bars on my window, and my toilet shares the same space as my shower.
Right. That's a jail.
That's a jail.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everywhere.
Everywhere. If your toilet doesn't get wet by your shower water, then you might be in a hotel. If your toilet gets wet by your shower water because it's in the same teeny tiny vicinity, it's a jail.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, barbed wire outside, cracked glass along the top, blah, 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 blah. And so I thought I was going to climb. Because I wanted to.
Yeah.
And they hadn't let anybody climb since 2017. And then when I like saw some people that worked at the mine, they're like, we get shot at every day. Mm. You, and that's on our side. Your mountain is on the rebel side. So you have to not only go to where we are, but you have to fly over to the rebel side, run up and down before someone wants to consume you. Because here they believe that if you have something that they want, they have to consume it to be able to have that characteristic quality or whatever else. Mm. And so 12 people had been killed the week before I got there.
Yeah.
And I decided that it wasn't my time. So I left and went to go climb in Australia instead of Indonesia. Uh-huh. But it was quite the experience.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
but you have a better one, so you tell us
yours. No, I don't have a better one. I have some different stories. Can I get a little bit more water maybe? Okay. I don't have a better one, but I do have, giving you an edit point there. Yeah. I don't have a better one, but I do have, I have a couple of interesting ones I want to share.
Yes,
I'm gonna stay,
I do.
I want to stay right with your story.
Okay? Yes.
West Papua.
Yes.
Okay, so I had created a TV show because I want to travel all the time. So I created a TV show for a sci-fi channel called Destination Truth. There was a show they had on the air called Ghost Hunters. Have you ever heard of Ghost Hunters?
I think I have for some reason.
It's,
we have like some eerie property out in Utah that people think UFOs and all that kind of stuff happen and they look for things there.
They call you and they're like, we want to come do a shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, if anyone ever gets a call like that, that's a location shoot. You should get a fee for that.
Okay.
They should pay you to use your location and you want to get a release form indemnifying you from any
craziness,
liabilities or problems. So, so I want to travel the world. And I, again, remember, I like Indiana Jones.
I know.
So
I liked it until the fortune cookie part.
How do you get to do Indiana Jones stuff?
Yep.
You got to have a reason to go to these like off the grid places. And we're increasingly in a, you know, in a grid world.
Yes.
So Sci-Fi's got this very popular show called Ghost Hunters. I go to them and I say, I got an idea. It's going to be like a monster hunting show. And we were going to find out where people in the National Enquirer or whatever, they say they saw monsters or dinosaurs or whatever around the world. And we're going to go to those places and we're going to look for them. And they're like, this is great. So we create this, I create this show, and it stars this guy named Josh Gates. Josh has gone on to become a mega TV star. He's got a show on Discovery called Expedition Unknown. He's got a talk show called Josh Gates Tonight. He's got a show called Tales from the Explorer's Room or whatever. I mean, like,
he's legit.
He owes me both kidneys.
Yes, apparently.
No. I mean, he's a great guy, and I'm super happy for his success. But he lived in the old apartment building with me behind the Chinese Theater.
Okay.
And when I created the show, I was like, this guy would be the perfect host. And so so we go to Papua New Guinea. There apparently was a dinosaur, a couple of dinosaurs people had seen. And so I kind of map it out. Like, one was in this town or near this town called Leh and on this small island. And, you know, the when I go looking for monsters, they're never, like, in the lobby of the Hyatt Regency.
Unfair.
They're deep in the Congo.
Unfair,
or,
of course,
you know, the most horrible places imaginable.
Yeah.
And so we are – I remember traveling and trekking to get to this place. And I remember sort of stopping and talking to myself in my head and saying, if I wanted to get access to electricity – and I'm talking about from a generator, forget about like a wall, just any electrical power, it would take me 2 days of travel from this moment to get it. That's how far I was from anything.
Okay.
And we are in a jungle, and this woman, you know, who, it's tribal stuff, you know, it's
right.
Cannibals where I am.
Right, right, right.
Like, for
right.
real.
And no, for real.
I have people with me that are protecting me from cannibals, and they're all, everyone's tribes. I'm with tribes.
Yes.
And in fact, I was in places where I was the first white person someone saw. Mm-hmm. So very, very, very Indiana Jones remote. And we're with the, we got our guys and they got the machetes and we're going through, you know, the jungles, like just hacking through. And, you know, it's like, where are we going to find this dinosaur, obviously? And suddenly we come to a little clearing. Do you remember in the movie Field of Dreams how the
yes.
ghosts kind of come out into the baseball field?
Yes, yes.
And then they blend back into the grass as they
yes,
go away?
Yes,
so
corn.
We come out into this open area and there's about 100 guys with AK-47s in a giant pit that looked like a meteor had fallen there, and they all turn and they point at us.
Oh.
And this is the one of the times that I actually pooped in my pants
yeah.
when I was in the field.
Yes.
And we learned from them that during World War II, there were German transport planes with gold, supposedly, that was flying over because the Japanese, they were controlling that part of the South Pacific. And there was rumors that many of these planes crashed with the German gold. And they thought this was where it had happened. The jungle just would have overtaken it in a matter of years. And so these guys are treasure hunters, heavily armed treasure hunters.
Apparently.
But treasure hunters.
Yes.
And so, like in the movie Field of Dreams, we just kind of blended back into the glass.
Just kidding.
The grass had disappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
And they turned back to their gold. So not an arrest there, but my scary gold Papua New Guinea story.
Yes.
But I was in Thailand and doing that show, Next Stop for Charlie, the spinoff of my movie Last Stop for Paul, and was all inspired. And it was like hangover stuff. And so I see this billboard of this zoo where there's a, you know, person like with a tiger in the zoo. And I was like, wow, you can get in a cage with a tiger. And so I come up with a story where my character lands in the tiger cage and he, you know, he'd gotten in a knife fight with somebody. And it's like this sort of wacky backstory, which plays out really funny in the series. But I needed to get into the cage to shoot that. And so I, you know, just to give them money.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm like, I saw a billboard with someone in that cage.
Yep.
I want to go in with a camera crew and I want to pretend to be asleep in that cage and do my little acting. And they take my money and I start shooting. And a person comes from the office and is screaming and yelling and is upset. You know, they think we're doing a TV show saying bad things about their zoo, which I wasn't. I was just doing a scene with a tiger.
Right.
Anyway, I got arrested and it was a whole to-do and, you know.
Oh.
And I signed a very long piece of paper that said
you have no idea what you signed.
All in Thai.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, you know, Purple Persuader is what they called the bill. It's a 500-note Thai bot, and it's purple.
Okay.
And I was told earlier in my shooting careers, that's the note if you want to buy your way out of something quickly.
Okay.
The Purple Persuader.
The Purple Persuader.
And fast.
I like it.
Don't delay.
Don't delay.
Or the next guy that's going to come who's the real boss, he's going to want a bunch of Purple Persuaders.
Yes. It gets more expensive the longer you wait.
Really, that's how it is.
Yeah, I believe it.
And you have to identify who is the person.
Mm-hmm. Ah, good stories.
Oh, I could talk about being arrested in foreign countries all day long.
We could. But thank you. Thank you so much for your time today.
So much fun.
It was. Perfect.
Yeah. You're so inspiring.
We all are.
You are, though.